Good morning, everyone. It's always fun to see your postage stamp faces. I love scrolling through the screens on these Thursday mornings just to see you're all in little sort of square boxes, but after about the third or the fourth screen of that collected gallery, I begin to get a real sense of the gathering that we always form together on Thursday mornings, as we come from all points on the compass, really, to learn, to gain insight for the journey that we're all on together. Today, we are walking the pathways blazed in chapters 9 and 10 by our author, Sister Joan Chittister, in which she calls us to become more conscious of the powers of patience and working with failure in the development of our prophetic spirituality. We're honored to have as guide on the morning's journey today our friend and fellow adventurer, Rebecca Parker. Rebecca is joining us from Atlanta, Georgia, where she acts as the executive director for the pioneering center for a spiritual transformation called Mary and Martha's Place. You can read more of her biography on our website, and I urge you to check out the Mary and Martha's Place website. It's a busy, happening site and center that she runs back there. It's something that I think if we were all closer, we would want to be part of as well, Rebecca. You ignited our interest when you spoke to us last winter about the structures of human consciousness and the destructiveness of our current mindset today. We are looking forward to Rebecca's own wisdom as she sort of expands Sister Joan's writings when she considers the spiritual chemistry that happens when the role of patience and failure work together consciously when they're applied to what is happening to us right now in the moment. So I think we should give Rebecca our sung blessing this morning to start her on her way. Tim, if you could cue up our sung blessing, would you raise your hands and just bless Rebecca on her way this morning?
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
The podium is yours, Rebecca.
Thank you. I love that blessing. This morning, when I was getting ready, I've heard it enough times because I've been listening to the programs that I was singing it to myself. I was glad to be among you and glad to see you again. What a topic you've taken on. The time is now. A call to uncommon courage. And you've really been looking at that for a while, and in your studies with Wisdom Jesus and your studies with evil and the study with Wisdom Way of Knowing. So I feel like that this topic is expanding and connecting what you're already doing. As I begin with all the words, I wanted just to take a moment for you to be able to connect with what, first of all, what drew your mind to this topic. And you can talk about it later in the small group if you want, but just think, what drew your mind to the topic? And it may be, I just come to whatever word in life is put together. But is there something that drew your mind to the topic? And then I would ask you, what drew your heart to the topic? They're different. The intelligence of the mind and the intelligence of the heart are both really needed for this work. And what I want to do today is I'm going to step back into Gebser and give us a larger frame and a larger context for the work that Joan Chittister is doing. The book is so compelling, and it's a call to action, and it holds up a mirror to the culture that we're living in. And it's what she wrote it in 2019, and here we are in 2023, and the complexity of what we're living in only continues to mount. So what a timely book. And it does call us to not just to reflection, but she's calling us to action. And I think the times we live in call us to action. It's in the writings of Richard Rohr recently. It's in the work that Cynthia Bouchot's been doing. So here we are. And in the book, we've been looking at traits of the prophet. And today, these two that we look at, I want to put this in a larger context and a frame, because I think for me, when I better understand the mental construct that we're in, it gives me a viewing place from which to understand. That's a little strong, but it's a viewing place to better evaluate what's happening. And that's the frame that I want to use. And I think that it will be a frame that you'll be able to use throughout the book with the different traits that Joan's offering for the prophet. So for just to remind you, Jean Gebser was a Swiss poet, philosopher, and author of the book, The Ever-Present Origin. He was born in 1905 and died in 1973. So what's important about this? When I don't know that you necessarily heard what the piece that I did in March, and that's not important. Because I'm not going back through the stages, the structures of consciousness. What's important, I think, is what he lays out for us about the structure of consciousness that we're currently living in, which is the mental rational. And I want us to spend a little bit of time looking at its characteristic, because I think we are like fish in water. We don't see what we're swimming in. And we're swimming in a particular structure of consciousness that causes us to look at things in a particular way. And the work we've been doing, a large group of us have been doing with Cynthia, she keeps bringing us back to this the mental structure of consciousness, so we can see and have a perspective on what's going on. And so we have a better idea also of what is arising and perhaps where our hope lies. So this, the mental structure of consciousness. Cynthia uses the words, as do others, that we are in free fall, that we are in a complete collapse of the mental structure of consciousness. And that's what we're seeing in our institutions. It's what we're seeing in global crises. We're seeing it in global warming. What we have known is unraveling. And I want to I'll say a little bit more about that. Then I have a few things I want to read. You know, Joan is so disheartened. Joan Chittister is so disheartened and outraged and grief-stricken by all these symptoms that we're seeing. And she sees it as something we need to address. But what I want to do and what I want to do is add this larger context. So the structures of consciousness have a time. They're over thousands and thousands of years. The mental structure of consciousness begins to arise in 800, 200 BC with the Greek philosophers. So its zenith It's all the structures of consciousness have an efficient stage and a deficit stage. The Renaissance was the zenith of the mental stage. And what that means is we human beings had the capacity to step back and learn and have a perspective on what it meant, what it means to be a human, and the capacities of a human, the art that comes from that period of time. Once this mental structure has gone into its deficit phase, which is what we are in now and what we're calling its free fall, is that the individual has become the focus of everything. Competition, division, the way that we use the linear time frame, everything gets compared and everything is measured. And there is a lot of the human spirit that's left out in that. But when it's the only way we can think to operate, then that's where we spend our time. I want to read a brief passage to you from this book called The Secret Teachings of Plants. There's a lot in here, but what I like about this is that you have someone besides a theologian and besides Cynthia Bougeot or Jean Gebser naming what we're experiencing. So the author's name is Stephen Herod Buhner. I'll be sure that you have the title if you become interested. And it says, we in the West have been immersed in a particular mode of cognition the past 100 years. Well, I would say it's more like 1,200, maybe close to 2,000 years. So it's way more than 100 years. We in the West have been immersed in a particular mode of cognition the past 100 years, in his words, a mode defined by its linearity, its tendency to reductionism, and its insistence on the mechanical nature of nature itself. This mode of cognition, the verbal, intellectual, analytical, is now the dominant one in Western culture. The primary mode of cognition that the practitioners of science have used during the past century, and it's analytical, linear, reductionistic, deterministic, mechanical, and has begun to reach the limits of its assumptions. For the particular mode of cognition used by some branches of science and technology, the system to which this mode has given rise can only maintain coherence by leaving out or ignoring a great many events that did and do not fit within the neat system it created. The wild oscillations that are now occurring in nature, from global warming to uncontrollable forest fires, are an aspect of the consequences of that ignoring. We have begun to reap the whirlwind. The threats to ourselves and the planet that is our home have never been more dire. These threats come from ways of thinking. They come from ways of thinking that are not sustainable and that bear little relationship to the real world and that are an inevitable error inherent in the linear fanaticism of contemporary perspectives. There is your definition of the mental rational run amok. They are threats that come from the dominance of one particular mode of cognition to the exclusion of all others. So this recognition of what we're living in is important, and the The other, I want to also hand you the work that's been done, that you've probably heard from Matthew Wright, where Matthew talks about our having this first axial age coming to an end and a second axial age arising. Well, it's similar language. This first axial age is this mental way of approaching everything. And the second axial age is characterized by interrelationship. And you'll, for those of you who did the work, have done any work with Teilhard, you'll find that this idea of evolution and the interconnectedness of all things is what Gebser would call the arising of the integral. But before I talk a little more about the integral, I want to go back to Cynthia Bougeot's book, and Wisdom Jesus, and let her describe the mental rational operating system. So I'm going to read again. How are you doing? Yeah, you're with me? Sometimes it's hard for me. I was like, I'm hearing people read. It's like, oh, I got to get myself back up underneath again. I need some water. So I just want to pause a second. I know we're not talking yet. I have to tell you, when I'm teaching my classes, we stop and talk and stop and talk. So I'm aware that I'm saying a lot. So with that pause, let's see what Cynthia says in her book, Wisdom Jesus. This is one of my favorite parts. So I'm reading from page 33, not that you need to go get a book, but in case you're interested in it later. So what she in this chapter that you, if you participated in that reading, she is in the section on looking at what it is that Jesus actually had to say there. What was it that Jesus was teaching? And so what she's doing in this section right here called the egoic operating system is helping us to see how it is we do think and what it is that needs to arise for humans to be able to live the teachings of Jesus. What it was that Jesus was offering us, this capacity for fullness of life. And where that connects with the crisis is what is being required of us. This would go to Cynthia and some and other writers, is we need to wake up at a very deep level to what we really are and to what our capacities are. We hold the imprint of the divine, and it is within. And it is that deep consciousness and that coming to recognize how we stand with one another, that gives us an aim that's different from perhaps the despair that we're feeling at what we're watching. So we're in a big web as we go into this material. So this is what Cynthia has to say about the mental rational. Although, you know, when she wrote this book, she hadn't read John Gebser. She found Gebser about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. So the work with Gebser has been reframing how she's talking about the material she's always used. And that's a lot of what we did at the retreat last week. The wisdom school that we were there for 6 days was looking at what is required of the human. What is our post to hold in these times of crisis? And literally, then how do we do it? What are the exercises? How do we bring ourselves into consciousness? That's what we did for 6 days last week. Was she went back to Gebser. She went back to what it is to truly be human and what is ours to do. So timely material in a way. She's been writing about this for a long, long time. All right, now I'm reading. The system already installed in us is a binary operating system. Binary, okay, that would be mental rational. It runs on the power of either or. People frequently call it the ego, but I prefer to stick with my metaphor and call it the egoic operating system. It comes by as dualism, honestly. All right, so you're thinking she's describing mental rational here, the mental structure of consciousness. It comes by its dualism, honestly. The binary operator is built right into the structure of the human brain. The egoic operating system is really the mental structure of consciousness, is really a grammar of perception, a way of making sense of the world by dividing the field into subject and object, inside and outside. Tasks of early childhood is to learn how to run the operating system so they fit into the structure of consciousness they've been born into. And Cynthia gives the example of her granddaughter at 1.5 could sing the Sesame Street jingle. One of these is not like the other. And pick out the cat from the dogs, you know. She loves to sing. Cynthia loves to sing that line. We're singing on her behalf. What makes a dog not like a cat? What makes a table different from a chair? What specific qualities make something particular and unique is how the system works. So we want to define ourselves as what our personality is and how we're unique and different. It's kind of where the mental operating goes. So back to Cynthia. When we become aware of our identity using this egoic operating system, we experience ourselves as persons with distinct qualities and attributes. When we introduce ourselves, we usually begin by listing these characteristics. I'm a Pisces, a 6 on the Enneagram, person who loves the ocean, Episcopalian. We identify ourselves by putting on our identifiers, that list of what makes us unique and special. And of course, that same list also makes other people separate from me. They are outside, I'm inside. If this went too far, can you imagine that the othering that we do in our culture would show up? Everyone's separate. Back to Cynthia. I'm annotating, obviously, as I read. In this operating system, she says, I experience myself as a distinct and fixed point of identity that has particular qualities and life experiences. And these things go to make me who I am. That's what life looks like when seen through the lens of the egoic operating system, the mental system. That's what the mental system did so beautifully. It thinks in terms of good and bad, right and wrong, before and after, up and down. And it gives us a solid sense of ourselves as the one at the hub of all this duality, the one inside mastering the experience. Let me see if I want to stop there or read one more thing. I think I'm going to pause there and go back. Because what I want to now, if we're trying to name and look at and have a sense of what this mental rational or the egoic operating system, how it operates, we want now to look at this arising and integral. Gebser calls it integral. He also uses the word aperspectival, which means you're standing apart from a perspective. The perspective becomes part within you. So you'll hear it referred to other ways. The other way you might have used the word integral or heard it is Ken Wilber's material. He talks about the integral. And they're similar, but they're not the same. Ken took his work on the integral from John Gebser and used the mental rational to understand it. He's writing about it, but still using, in a way, flatland to talk about what's going to become very dimensional. Ken has a lot to teach us. I know that, but it is a little different. And I want to mention that. So, and the other thing to say is that we're holding this these structures of consciousness, and purposefully Gebser's not using the word stages. This isn't the archaic, the mythic, the magical. We're not. There's an intelligence that we need in each of these structures of consciousness. There is an intelligence in the mental that serves us well. This is not, see, the mental way of hearing this is, oh, well, if the mental's bad, then what would we want to do? We need to get rid of it, because we do either or thinking. What we're doing is learning to hold the gifts and that efficient rise in each of the structures of consciousness. So this origin, this purposefulness of humans has been around as long as there have been Homo sapiens. This, and before, into the cosmos. So we're not, Gebser's not trying to create something brand new. What he's saying is that certainly the Western culture and more is in a time where the mental structure is no longer all that we need, and there is an arising that we're familiar with, but it will take on the balance. It has the potential to take on the balance of the way we understand and can be in the world. So I want to say a little bit more about the integral. It's more than being a nice person. As Cynthia says, she likes to go nice. It's more than being a nice person. It's a shift in our way of experiencing the world. And I know these words, it's like, but what does that mean? That's why I'm going to try to put a little more texture around it. Because we know how to live with meaning. You all do. You wouldn't be here if you didn't. And there is a shift in the way we can perceive that gives us more space. And greater access to the intelligence that brings all things into being. We would call it God. Okay, so I'm going back to Eye of the Heart, not Eye of the Heart, Wisdom Jesus. And I have a few more things to say about integral and science, and I'm looking right now that I think we'll be able to get ourselves in small groups in the right amount of time, and I won't go too long today. Okay, so here she goes. She's talking about what this sense of identity is that Jesus is offering. Our sense of identity that's generated through the egoic operating system is a mirage, an illusion. There is no such self. There is no small self, no egoic being, no thing that's separated from everything else. No thing that's separated from everything else that has insides and outsides. All these impressions are simply a function of an operating system that has to divide the world up into bits and pieces in order to perceive it. We walk through our lives perceiving, reacting to, and attempting to negotiate the world that's out there on the basis of this operating system. It's like being lost in a mirage. A system that is based in duality can't possibly perceive oneness. It can't create anything beyond itself. Only more duality and more trouble. So the drama goes on. But we do have the capacity to shift to a whole different basis of perception. We come into this life with another operating system, already lying in latency. And if we wish to move in this direction, we can learn to steer by it, understand through it, and ultimately discover our deepest sense of identity within it. And then, okay, you still with me? So she through her experience with the Christ is offering what she's going to next call seeing with the eye of the heart. What is seeing with the eye of the heart, and what does that look like? And this is another way of talking about the integral that Gebser's offering. And just as a complete this, I want to talk too about what the scientists are seeing. So this other operating system is the operating system of the heart. The heart has a different way of perceiving. Rather than dividing and conquering, it connects with a seamless and indivisible reality through a whole different way of organizing the informational field. And it's ours for the choosing. In wisdom, the heart is primarily an organ of spiritual perception, a highly sensitive instrument for keeping us aligned with, as we journey in the horizontal axis of our life in time, with the vertical axis of timeless reality, which is the realm of meaning and value and conscience and belonging. The heart picks up reality in a much deeper and more integral way than our poor Cartesian minds even begin to imagine. I'm pausing for a moment so you can absorb. Now I'm going to say a word about the way what the sciences are offering that are another way to back up or support this idea of the arising integral, and that it is where our deep self lies, and as we can find the place to live from there, we have another way to address what is happening around us in our culture, because fixing it with the old mindset won't work. So I'm going to take I don't know a lot about science. I'm beginning to pick up articles and I put myself in school around the sciences. So I'm sure there's scientists out there, and you can tell us more. So when you look at, you know, quantum physics and the string theory, and you look at the neurology and the MRIs and being able to see the structure of the brain, the study of microbiomes in the soil and the interconnectedness of way the trees talk to each other. You all probably have bits and pieces of this information. That what we're getting, what the cosmologists are showing us, that the substructure underneath all of this, the primary characteristic is interrelatedness, not separateness. Interrelatedness is at the structure of the universe, which forms a web, which is what the energy of the integral is offering. So we don't have to divide it up and dissect it to understand it. It explains itself as a whole and is interrelated. So the image that we have is a structure of a web. When you know what happens if you touch one part of the spider web, it goes all the way through. And the spider knows that something's hit it and knows where to go. The structure of the cosmos, of the earth, of the universe, of our body, of the trees, of the soil is interconnectedness. And it has much to teach us. Not to mention Jesus. So in Cynthia's work, one of the exercises that we often do, I'm not going to take us through the whole exercise today, but I just want to tell you, it's called the web. And what we do is, like as we started today, we get quiet. And then we sense into that, you know, I'm sure Heather's done this with you. I've listened to so many times with Heather. You sense your body. You could do it right now. You sense your feet. When you put attention on your feet, you can feel this electrical aliveness in your body. And it just, we can light up, we can find our hands where it's like, I forgot that I had hands. It's like, oh yeah, there's a life force. And the same, that intelligence of the heart, you know, where you can come into a room sometime and nobody's saying anything, but you know something just happened in there. That's that heart intelligence. We can read things without having to be said in words. So these intelligences, our mind, that sensing body, the heart, that's what we're working to strengthen. They, when they're together, they hold another way of knowing. And you can feel it even right now with us on this call. When we sing together, when you sing that blessing, when you pause, when something strikes you that is of meaning, we can get off of this call and go and be transformed in a way. We've been touched by something. It's this web that we hold, and we're not sitting in the same room. So I'll be quiet for just a minute here and just sense into this web that we're holding together. Just sense into this deep web we're holding together. It's not just the ideas or the words coming out of my mouth. It's your own longing, your connection to one another. This web's true in all your places of belonging. And it's a marker of how we, of what we're growing into. So I have one more thing that I want to read before we go into groups for conversation. So what I've just done is I'm naming that this integral structure of consciousness requires new skills, and it requires an opening in ourselves. It requires our being, our openness to what we do not know, a willingness to step into the unknown, because there is a quality of presence we can't figure out ahead of time. So the quality of presence becomes very important. And you know it. I'm not telling you something you don't know. But we're beginning to understand that as a tool, so we can bring it into a variety of situations. And it's not something that's just happening to us, but we learn to cultivate. So we've talked about presence. We've talked about this three-centered knowing. It is those three centers holding together that can drop us into presence. Otherwise, the mind is so good at what it does. And another of our key tools, I'm sure Heather's talked about it and you know it from other places, is capacity for self-observation. When we can step back and see ourselves chattering away or step back, whatever, there's so many things, but when we can see ourselves doing, we have space. And we can make another choice. Like just the other day, I was getting ready to drive into a particular traffic. And all of a sudden, I could watch myself getting anxious and tense. I could watch myself get afraid. And then I laughed. I was like, oh, you really don't like these situations, do you? And she was like, no, I really don't. we can get some space through this self-observation. And then that also connects us to our attention practices. So they grow they grow the integral self. See, we could have five more sessions just on those, but we're not. So I'm going to read from, I'm back to this book that I read from earlier, The Secret Teaching of Plants, because I think I love this description of something that happened to him, because I feel like he's describing what integral feels like and what the experience is. And most everybody else are trying to use words and their mind to describe what isn't a mental interaction. So I want to read this, and then okay. So it's interesting. This book is actually divided into two parts. He says the first part is about facts and ideas and theory and information. The second half of the book is about poetry and music and the other way we learn. And he says you can start anywhere in the book and read any part you want. And you don't even have to read the first part. So I jumped into the back. This is a quote from Henry David Thoreau, and then he comments on it. And so here we go. As I was entering the deep cut, it's a capital D, capital C. Deep cut is a particular location. As I was entering the deep cut, the wind, which was conveying a message to me from heaven, dropped it on the wire of the telegraph, which it vibrated as it passed. I instantly sat down on a stone at the foot of the telegraph pole and attended to the communication. Henry David Thoreau. When you feel, and this is from our author, when you feel yourself touched by meaning, know that there is something important for you in this phenomena that called you to it. Go to it and sit with it and strive to hear what is there for you. The lessons are often complex. Many will take years to understand. You will know the importance of the lesson by the power of its touch upon you. There will be something in it that tells you there is a teaching especially meant for you. And so you must wrap it up carefully in your heart cloth. Anchor in your experience the moment of first contact. And from time to time, take it out again, unwrap and contemplate it. In your contemplation, many truths will emerge. Eventually, in time, with your ripening, the lesson itself will burst into understanding. You will stand in stillness at the pregnant point, and you will see the teaching in its fullness, be able to rotate it and see it along any axis of rotation. Ultimately, this mode of perception, integral, is not just a tool, it is a way of life, a mode of being. It is a world within which you are and always were meant to live. It ultimately becomes, if you wish it, an abode, not a place you visit from time to time. You give up eventually being a bridge and crossover. Ultimately, the use of direct perception as a mode of being, as a normal way of cognition, begins to erase mind-body dualism. You begin to directly, you begin to directly experience that there is no higher and lower, no up and no down, no better than and less than, no hierarchy at all. I think it's time for us to go into the groups. There are a few things I want to say in terms of the importance of this and our call, but I think it'd be best left to the end. So let's see what you have to say, where it's landing. And Tim, if you want, I can read the questions and then, and it will be in your chat room as well. The first question is that I wrote out was, what stands out to you in the talk that you are curious about that might shift a point of view? And what's really behind that question was, I wanted people to have the ability to go, I don't understand it, or I don't agree with it, or I use the word curious. But where is it? It's really, where is it landing in you? And perhaps it has the power to shift, perhaps not. The second question is, where do you sense the integral arising? Do you arise in yourself, around you? And what signs might you see? And as always, what is arising in you is what you need to talk about. The questions aren't meant to bind you. They're meant to initiate conversation and see what arises. So that's what I have to say.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. Now we have about 15 minutes to pursue some closing conversation with Rebecca. Rebecca, did you say you had something to comment on maybe to begin this time toward the end here?
It's probably more like closing, but I was in a group with Ellen and Cindy, and my heart's open. I'm so struck by what your own lives are teaching you, how important the conversation is, just what you're seeing. It feels funny to be the speaker, because the way that's set up is that I know and can practice everything I'm saying and know, and it doesn't acknowledge the wisdom that you hold already and what you're doing. And I just want to bow to that and say thank you for all the things you're doing that I can't even imagine. So I'm grateful to be sitting with you.
Thank you. Anyone has a comment, you can try to raise a hand or digitally raise your hand or just unmute or throw something in the chat. We'll try to get it here. Yeah. Ingrid, why don't you unmute and go ahead?
I took in what you were talking about and I'm excited about it. But some of the comments in the room I was in were, how does this directly apply to what Joan is saying? I think I understand it, but other people didn't. And I wonder if you can comment on that.
For me, Joan is doing such important on the ground work, and a call to, in this book in particular, call to action, who she's been. And I made the choice to pull the spectrum out, rather than look at the particular chapters. I talked to Mary Ann about that. She said, no, I want you to do what makes sense for you, because all of those things, those topics that Joan's bringing up are tools. Are tools for us as we answer the call, if you will. It's a challenge. And what are the tools that we have? And certainly patience. We see, and then I would, let's just look at that. How do we talk and think about patience in the mental rational? You know, we have patience with time, and we have a particular way of defining that. And it's not either or. See, this is also the problem, is the language sounds like, well, the way that it takes in is the mental's bad, and we need to stop doing the mental and do the integral because that's better. And that's not what I'm trying to communicate, or what I think the work is trying to communicate. is we hold all those pieces together so that we think we can come to thinking about patience as patience with ourselves, patience from the inside, taking the long view, where how are things interrelated? So it's different than perhaps the way we grew up being taught to be patient. So I think any one of the topics in her book, there's a way to look at it with the linear, the mental, and then how does it, what does it look like rounded? What does it look like when Jesus gets hold of it? So that, I guess that's what I was trying to bring to the yeah. conversation, was a way to hold all of these words in a larger frame, and also maybe some hope. I think there's so much going on that we can just get distraught and not see the longer arc that Teilhard points us to. So that was my hope. Thank you, Ingrid. Mm-hmm.
What else, friends? Anybody else want to offer something up? Pat, yeah, go ahead.
So many things were stirring in our group this morning, Rebecca. One of the questions that arose was a kind of tussling with the actual semantics of the word integral. I wonder if you can just tell us a little bit more about how you see that as the arising out of this chaos, so that we see that a little more clearly as we leave the morning.
Can you say a little bit more about where the struggle is? And I'm not saying, and I'm asking because I'm curious, and I think we would all be curious. It's not like, oh, well, yes, let's fix this. See, that's what the mental wants to do, is correct. I'm just curious where that came from, and let's see where it goes.
Well, yes, I think that the notion of a specific definition, a mental definition, is certainly where that comes from. And okay. So the notion of just expanding that, it Thich Nhat refers to the notion of interbeing, which for me is one of the foundation stones of understanding it. And yet that's not necessarily present in the word integral. So that's where we were coming from.
Oh, that's lovely. What a nice offering. You've answered, you're speaking to this the concern in your group, and probably a lot of other people as well, but simply by what you're saying. When we want to get the word integral and what's behind it and pull it apart, partly that's what the mental brain wants to do. And what you just did was offer us another part of the way that things are interrelated. You used a different word, and it's absolutely part of being able to move from the inside out, to have enough space to watch ourselves, to invite something larger in. We probably all have different experiences of what the integral is. It's the word Gebser used, so it's the word I'm choosing. But I wouldn't want to get stuck on it. Again, what you're offering is, it's broad. And again, even just like the piece that I chose to read about the plants, one can take it like a map. It's like, oh, well, then am I supposed to go outside and be talking to the plants? It's like, well, you can. They do talk back, and they're lovely. But it's not the map. There's not the map of how it happens. It's what, if I could, I would read from different poets in different places that are experiences of what I don't even want to use the word now, what the arising looks like. how it feels, how it hits in our body, how it hits in our heart. It's large. And that's what I was saying to our group was, you know, there's so much wisdom here. You all have a taste of it.
Thank you.
Anything else from the groups that you want to share? Maybe it's not personal, but something you wanted to bring from the group? And if not, I will read to you again.
Yes.
All right. I'm just so curious what is out there. And so I bless what our work together and what we're holding. What I wanted to say in closing was that we are living in fragile times. I feel that we are. And that you are answering the call by being here. It is time for us to wake up into this, the deeper consciousness that Jesus was calling us to. I pulled a logion. Have y'all studied the Gospel of Thomas? You know, the teachings of sayings of Jesus. Let's see. I think I'm going to go with the poem instead. I think it's the gospel might take us where we don't want to go. It's 20, if you like the Gospel of Thomas, if you use it, it's 28. But I think what I would rather say is to remember that this call to awakening is not something we take on all by ourselves. We are met by the Holy. We're met by the helpers, and we're met by the Holy Spirit, and we are partnered in this work. I think so often we worry and we can wring our hands and feel like it's ours to do alone, and we've got to clean ourselves up or whatever, wherever our brain goes, but we are met. The teaching and from the Gospels tell us that we already have all that we need. It may be need dusting off so that we can remember it, but we have the mechanism. We have what we need. We're prepared. We're equipped. And we don't do it alone. We just don't. We're met over and over and over by the divine with such leaning in and such care for us individually, but it's more than that. And we know that we're being asked to do what humans were created to do. And that is in Galatians 5, those fruits of the Spirit, forgiveness, joy, compassion, gratitude, love. Those are energies. And when we can live out of them, we literally put them out into the world, and it needs it. And we need it. So I just remind us of that we're met. This from 2 Corinthians. But all of us with face unveiled, mirroring the Lord's glory, are being transformed into the same image. From glory to glory. For all of us with face unveiled, mirroring the Lord's glory, are being transformed into the same image. And I'll close with this poem from Rosemary Watala Tromer. She writes one every day, and this one is on light. She says, "It's light this morning, It's the light that opens me. How is it a certain changing angle of gold can make the heart leap up, all nimble and sprightly and eager to praise, as if it's never before seen such beauty? As if it doesn't happen every day, this radiance that reaches through space to find us wherever we happen to stand on this unlikely planet. I don't know how it is the light works as a luminous key to unguard me and swing wide my gates. But on this morning, filled with news that makes me shudder, shut down, close off, and clench, this stroke of light is everything. Thank you for having me.
Rebecca, thank you for the blessing you brought us this morning. I want to say more about that in a minute, but I'm still caught, as we all are, in that luminous moment of this poem. And while I can feel it right now on the back of my neck, let us take this luminous moment and wrap around our dear friend, Marianne Evans, who is in hospital now from the effects of her next round of COVID. She needs our love and prayer. And we are in that moment of interbeing together, which I believe we can ask for God's presence and healing to surround and bless and bring back into health our sister, Marianne. So be it. This morning, Rebecca has actually been talking about patience and failure in ways that I think we really need to hear them. The failure of our current ebbing, destructive mindset of linear, fragmented consciousness, and the patience that is required as prophets and people of faith to expand ourselves, open our hearts to the long arc of becoming this next arising that was the end of Jesus' story for us, that great promise of interbeing, of oneness with each other, with the divine, with our Mother Earth. What a morning, Rebecca. Thank you so much. And next week, we're looking forward to meeting your excellent partner, husband, Buddy Parker, who has a remarkable voice for faith and justice in our time. He will be talking about the next chapters, chapter 11 and 12, on courage and consciousness. Those seem to me to be perfect words for Buddy Parker to be bringing us. So we're looking forward to being with you. Don't miss next week. It's going to be another stellar Parker offering. So back to Judith, and thank you so much again, Rebecca, for expanding all of our worlds today.
And back to all of us, just unmute and say goodbye to the family that we've become, the Word and Life family. So, and we remember Marianne, please bring her healing and patience and strength. Those are words of our Anna, and bring her the medical help she needs. And may she feel the divine presence right now that we all feel when we're with each other. Goodbye. We'll see you next Thursday. All right. Bye, everybody. Unmute.
See you soon.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Bye. 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 Next week.
Thank you, Rebecca. Rebecca.
Appreciate Rebecca, it.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Morning, Rebecca.
Thank you.
Thanks. It's
wonderful.
Rebecca. Thank you. You're feeling better, Tim.
Take good care of you.
Bye. See you next week.